This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. I've got two more tales of crime for you, beginning with crime classics. We'll hear the killing story of William Corden and the farmer's daughter from November 25th, 1953. After that, it's The Curious Patient from This Is Your FBI, their story from April 11th, 1947.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That's a cricket, a Suffolk County cricket, and he's chirping away at a merry pace. Therefore, he's a male cricket, for among crickets, only this sex can chirp. At the present moment, this particular fellow happens to be in a hayloft in an English barn. The year is 1827, and it's spring, and it's evening, and it's warm. And if you're going to be a cricket, now is the time, for the hay lies sleek against your antenna. Oh, my, yes. Dead cricket. 120 pounds of country girl just fell on him. Girl's name, Mariah Martin, and she was a dead weight. So tonight, my report to you on the killing story of William Corder and the farmer's daughter.
Crime Classics. A series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
England in 1827 was between periods. A decade before, Napoleon had met his Waterloo, and a decade later, Victoria was to sit on the throne. True, in this year, which concerns us, the country was briefly stunned by the affair Lavarie, which almost cost England the continent of Australia, until cooler heads and more honest bookkeeping prevailed. And when the shuddering was done and normalcy returned, people returned to normal pursuits, which included the young folk. For instance, Mariah Martin. A giggler, 5'2", 120 pounds. Pretty.
Oh, God.
Demure. And the most chuckable chin in Paulstead. Which chin chucking was being done by William Corder?
Mariah. Pinklin. Pinklin Mariah.
Oh, you're the one, William. You are.
Twice over, Pinklin.
Oh, God.
Yes, you be. And sweet smelling you are, too.
So tis the hay you smell in the month of May.
In your dilly hair.
Oh, God. Oh, and just to think, William.
To think what?
All the seasons from now on, from May to December, and then start a new year, and all that near and the next.
What? What talk you?
For every month, for every season, you are mine.
Well, I have not said that, or perhaps sometimes...
What?
I want to go, I want to leave here. I want to...
Oh, your dilly mouth moves so sweetly and says nothing at all. You'll not go from me, William.
Oh?
Because you will marry me. You must marry me, William.
Must I?
Oh, yes, else...
Else what?
I will tell. I will tell what you did, William. I would.
Mariah.
How you stole from my poor daddy.
Mariah.
You cannot understand how his poor money was dug up and taken away.
Mariah, I want to say a word.
And should I say what happened? The jail you would go, lad. Maybe hung. I heard in Ipswich they did a hanging recent to a lad which stole a heifer.
Mariah, will you listen to me?
And I do so love you. A thiefling, but I love you.
Mariah, will you marry me?
Oh, you've been trying to say it all the time.
Of course I have.
Of course you have.
Pinklin.
Oh, God.
Pinklin.
I would like to read to you a description of William Corder as taken from a 19th century journal. He was about 5 feet 6 inches in height, usually affected a drab greatcoat, plaid lilac handkerchief, a black dress coat and blue pantaloons, and had rather a large nose, a small face, and a ring on the little finger of his right hand. That was William Corder. Of course, since this was spring and a warm one, he took off his drab greatcoat, especially on the evening when he left Mariah and went home and sharpened a knife. Oh, he was a handy man. That's why he was so useful around the various farms in Paulstead. Everybody loved him. Everybody needed him. To mend a plow or stretch a thong, the cry went up, "Aye, Billy Corder!" This with smiling affection. And the next morning, when he went to the farm of his betrothed,
"Aye, Billy Corder!"
From Mariah's father.
"Aye, Billy Corder!"
From her mother.
"A morning, William."
"A morning to each of you."
"You look worried, Billy. Come into the house and I'll tea you nice and with some dilly biscuit."
"Now, Ma."
"He looks weary."
"Leave him be, Ma.
What you been doing, Billy?"
"A sharpening."
"Oh, what a sharpening?"
"Knives, for the farmers all about."
"I'd give you a hand whenever you'd want, Billy."
"How do you? But I come this morning with another favor to ask."
"Oh, my."
"What favor, Billy boy?"
"Concerning..."
Oh, my.
"Concerning what, Billy boy?"
"My love. My pinklin. My dilly girl, Mariah."
"I be losing her, Billy boy."
"You be good to Billy, Mariah."
"Now, Ma."
"Just be good to him, you hear?"
"Yes, Ma."
"Then you be saying yes to what I'm asking?"
"I'm saying it."
"Then, here's a thing."
A dowry thing. Well, since there was the stealing, since my poor money was dug by robbers, there's not very much I have.
But, Murray,
I am a farmer, but my ground is clay and rocks."
"And you are a mole catcher."
"And I cannot run fast no more."
"Come here to me, Billy."
"Here I be."
"But close as a mother to a son. Son. Son."
"Yes?"
"I have a farthing put aside for Mariah and for you."
"Oh, Taddeo. And there's a pistol I like so much in the parlor."
"For what, a pistol?"
"Which I must have. Traveling as we are, Mariah and me, to London for the marriage."
"To London you go? To be wed?"
"Yes."
"Oh, lad, oh, village, is every girl dreaming. London to be married in."
"You're my true love, Mariah. Tonight I'll fetch you and we'll go down to London. Or better..."
"What better could there be?"
"The Red Barn, you know it. I'll meet you there at the crossroads."
"Oh, whatever you say, love. Ain't he a love, Ma?"
"Oh, he's a love, all right. He's a real love."
"Oh, what are we doing back in this dark barn, Willie? Why are we not off to London? I showed you the jewels I got from Ma, Willie. I made her give me the cameo necklace, too. Now, please, can't we go to London to be wed? I do so want to wed with you, Willie."
"Mariah. Mariah.
You know what you are?"
"Oh."
"Clumsy, that's what you are. I bring you Daddy's pistol like you asked, and what do? It goes off in your hand. Now let's off to London, Willie. It's a bride I'm dying to be. Willie, are you there? I can hardly see you, Willie. Where are you?"
"Here I am. Lovey."
"Oh."
"Pink."
With the knife he sharpened last night, Then he carried Mariah down from the loft into the empty corn room. He left her there for a moment and ran down the road a piece.
Evening. Can I borrow the use of a spade? Taddeo.
And Billy Boy went back to the red barn, and there he dug a hole. 6 by 3 by 3. I put Mariah in it and filled the hole again. And Billy took the high road to London. He also took the gun, the jewels, and the farthings. Not a care had he as he whistled his way down the road. For Mariah's parents thought Mariah was with him. And in London...
Step ye up, lads! I'm just a country bumpkin trying to make my way in London town. So step you up. Here we have it. Here's a pea and here's 3 shells from walnuts. I place the pea beneath the shell in the middle and move the shells about. Now, who's a brave lad? Who's a clever lad? Tell me under which shell is the pea? Oh, not for free, lad. For a wager. A pound? A pound. Now, watch your clothes. This one on the end? We shall see. Well, you lose. It was under this one in the middle. Now, let's try it again.
And in 6 months, William Corder had enough money to purchase a house and a bakery shop, a feather bed upstairs, a parlor beneath it, and beneath the parlor, bread and buns. He needed only one more thing. So he went to the newspaper and he inserted an ad.
Lady for matrimony wanted. A private gentleman, age 24, entirely independent, whose disposition is not to be exceeded, has lately lost his family to the hand of Providence. If this meets the eye of any agreeable lady who feels desirous of meeting with a sociable, tender, kind, and sympathizing companion, they will find this advertisement worthy of notice. Honor and secrecy may be relied on. Mr. X, 68, Leadenhall Street. Here, sir, insert this in the next edition. At your service?
There was an advertisement.
At your service?
Are you the
gentleman? Mr. X, I am he, if such as you are seeking him out.
The advertisement said sociable.
You were comely.
It said tender.
And your hair a shade of brown that will sweeten in the sunlight.
It said kind.
And hazel eyes.
It said a sympathizing companion.
How could such as fair as you need sympathizing?
Gentlemen.
I kiss your end.
Oh.
Inklin.
That's how they did it in 1827. At least that's the way William Corder did it. Quite a handyman, wasn't he? The way he got rid of one girl and found another. And in his neighborhood, when a pipe needed mending or a bun baked, "Aye, Willie Corder," the cry went up. "Aye, Willie Corder."
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Hyland.
England's winter of 1827 was a mild one, except for the big blow of November 12th to 20th, which temporarily crippled the fleet. It was a season of cool freshets and sunny, bright days. Not all was peaches and cream, however. Because of the locust plague of that year, many people starved to death. Two, an unprecedented series of coal mine mishaps around Newcastle in December finally caused Louis Trini, a gazetteer of the day, to write, and I quote, "What with the fleets having to be refurbished, what with the cruel cries of the starving in the streets, and what with the shawled widows at the mines, this winter, though a gentle one, has been quite disastrous. We await spring," unquote. Well, spring came, and one of the nicest sights on an April day on Leadenhall Street in London was the new Mrs. William Corder. She would lean her head against her husband, and arm in arm, they would stroll.
Willie.
It's the truth, every bit of it. When Wellington called for volunteers, I stepped out of their ranks.
Oh, Willie.
It's the truth, Bertie.
I know it's the truth, Willie. It's just that my heart is thumping because you might have been killed.
Me?
Oh, Willie.
But, Bertie, I knew when I volunteered nothing was going to happen. I hadn't met you yet, and I had to live to do that, so...
What else?
Huh?
What else happened to you before you met me?
Well, before I met you, I was in Italy.
You said France. Willie?
Before France, I mean.
And the Italian women, what of them, Willie?
Oh, I didn't have no time to bother with them. I was on a secret mission.
Oh, Willie.
Now, don't you tell nobody.
Brave Willie.
You happy, Bertie?
Happy is as happy do.
Happy do, indeed.
Oh, yes. Willie?
Yes?
The jewels you're going to sell to my brother, how come you buy them?
Why, a gamble. A game of cards.
But they're a lady's jewels.
Then isn't it obvious, Duck? I gambled with a lady. In Genoa, it were, while on secret assignment. Garbed, I was like a gypsy.
I would have lost to you, too.
Downy bird.
Oh.
Come.
How, sister? Hi, Willie Corder. Hi, lad.
Nonny, brother Sidney.
Twice and go to grass, brother-in-law, for what luck you had at the cards last night. Will we cheat me at this transaction, too?
Isn't he priceless, Brother Sidney?
He's a good brother-in-law.
But how good? What price will you give me for these jewels to add to your stock?
Middling good.
You see, wife, your brother becomes a haggler when it comes to money.
Be generous, Sidney. What you give us will buy a new oven.
£50.
Done.
For this cameo necklace alone. This other stuff... not worth a shocked farthing.
£50, then.
I'll write you out a check.
Daddy-o.
Good brother.
And of me?
A duck. A dilly duck. A love.
The very jewels Willie had stolen from the late Mariah Martin. And you remember where Mariah got them from. Her mother. And you remember her mother.
Mariah writes such nice letters, Huey.
We can be proud. I never knew she could write.
I guess Willie Corder's taught her lots.
That's right. Mr. and Mrs. Martin were getting letters from Mariah since the very first week she was away. Once every fortnight. For a year now. Letters written on scented stationery in a feminine hand by Willie Corder. Chatty letters. Having to do with the shops in London.
Oh, I'd like stroll Piccadilly myself sometime. In ribbons like my daughter Dee does.
Newsy letters about trials and tribulations of her married life.
What you laughing?
Oh, come here and read this. Here.
I don't think that's very funny.
You wouldn't.
Warm letters.
Oh, isn't that a sweet thing she says here, Huey? I miss you, Ma, she says. I miss you, Pa, she says. And how's the farming, she asks. And how's the mole catching? And the field of my father's clay and rocks. Oh.
A good one. A likely daughter.
Only?
Only what?
Here, she says, don't come to London, Ma, she says. Now, why would you say that?
Aggie.
What do you want?
Mariah could not write when she left here.
She writes good now. Better than me. Ah, that Willie. Hey, Willie Corder, eh, lad?
Oh!
I frightened you, Will.
No. Oh, no, no.
What were you doing?
Writing.
Writing what?
Nothing.
Now, now. Now, now, now. Don't try to hide anything from me, Will.
Oh, Pinklin, I wouldn't do that.
Then what writing were you doing?
Promise not to tell.
What writing, Will?
Promise.
I promise.
Come here. See this?
The check my brother gave you.
Look again.
For £150.
Uh-huh.
But he gave you a check for only 50.
Uh-huh.
Then what you were writing...
I fixed the check. Oh, what a joke on your brother. Hey, hey, ha, hey.
Well.
Downy bird.
Forgery.
Not quite. Simply an extra £100. Clever.
Is it?
Clever. Clever, clever.
It is.
Isn't it?
What a one.
Who?
What a one. What a... Now, who could that be?
The tradesman, I think. Let's go to the window and see. The tradesman. Huh. And see what he has for us.
A new bed warmer.
A new quilt. A new feather quilt.
And a pillow. A new pillow.
And look down there. A new bed.
Oh, what a one. What a one you are. Oh, husband. Tradesman, bring them in. Bring them all in. Everything.
And later on, they chuckled about what a wonderful joke he had played on his brother-in-law, Sidney. History does not record Sidney's reaction. It's true what Bertie said. What a one was William Corder. Especially what a one he was with the quill. Not only had he taken up hiking checks, but he was still penning those letters I told you about. Only the scent had been changed.
This latest letter I have here, Hughie. Maria says, should I ever be so bold as to come to London, she would not receive me.
She never could write.
Oh, go to sleep, old man.
And according to court reports and testimony, this is what happened then.
Go on. Go to sleep, old man.
Then, Mrs. Martin said, she fell asleep too.
Mm-hmm.
Then...
Ma? Ma? Don't be frightened, Ma.
Ma?
It's me, Ma.
Maria?
Oh, Ma, it's terrible.
What? What's terrible?
What's happened to me?
What's happened to you? Don't you like London?
I'm not in London.
Not in London? Not in London?
Aye, Aggie. Aye, aye, aye.
London? Not in London.
Wake up, Aggie. Put the tea to a bubble.
Not in... Oh, I had me a fright, Hughie. A terrible, awful nightmare.
Tore the sheet you did. Now up to the tea lady.
Dreamt she wasn't in London.
Dreamt up to the tea lady. Up.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And the next night?
I never got to London, Ma.
Where did you get to, Maria?
Hardly away from here.
You dead, Maria?
I be dead, Ma.
Oh. Oh.
I be dead. I be not far from here, dead.
Where? Where?
I be...
Wake, Aggie. Bubble the tea for me.
And on the third night...
In the red barn at the crossroads...
How come you're there?
He put knife to me and dug my grave.
In what place?
In the corn room, 3 feet down.
And Willie did that to you?
Willie did. Willie did. You fix him, Ma. You fix him, you hear?
Hughie! Hughie! Wake up! Wake up, old man! Wake up! Murder's done.
What?
Our daughter, dear. She lies 3 feet under the corn room in the Red Barn.
Oh, that to be done.
Mariah told me in a dream, in a three-night dream, she told me, get shovel to you and dig! Up and get shovel to you!
He got up all right, and he got shovel to him, and together they went down to the Red Barn, and they dug, and they found a skeleton, and Mariah's shawl, and Mariah's shoes, and Mariah's dress. But the thing that clinched it, the thing that made them sure, the skeleton had the 4 front teeth missing in its lower jaw, exactly the 4 teeth that had been missing from Mariah's mouth when she was alive.
Police!
And again as she ran down the road toward Paulstead.
Police! Police! Police!
Which was finally heard by Constable James Lee, who viewed the body and rubbed his chin and took a trip to London, where he sought for and found William Corder, who was tried and found guilty. And a half hour before he was hanged, wrote a letter in his own hand on unscented paper, and, of course, signed in his own name.
Dear Birdie, good wife, I am fully aware of the shame and disgrace which I must have cost you. So that there be some vestige of pride remain, such as a woman should have for her husband, I suggest you bury me in the finest vestment obtainable, such as silk. My coffin, I do pray you, for your own sake, should be of mahogany, with moulding of silver. A cherubim on my tombstone of marble, with some fitting sentiment, such as, Willem Corder, of sweet and gentle memory, though not innocent of deed, I am innocent of heart. Goodbye, dear wife. Willem Corder.
On the scaffold, there was some embarrassment because the trap would not work. Corder, who was, you'll remember, a very handy man, fixed it. But after the trap was sprung, it took him 12 minutes to die. So he probably didn't do a very good job. William Corder, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed by Bernard Herrmann and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. And the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Richard Peel was heard as William Corder, Betty Harford as Mariah, Alma Lawton as Birdie, Jeanette Nolan as the mother, Joseph Kearns as the father, and Donald Lawton as Sidney. Gil Warren speaking.
This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This is your FBI, the official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Tonight, while you're listening to this program, you might be called to the phone to answer an easy question.
Yes?
This is the Radio Checking Bureau. Is your radio turned on now?
Why, yes, it is.
What program are you listening to, please?
It's This Is Your FBI, just starting.
Do you know who sponsors that program?
Sure I do. It's my good friends, the Equitable Life Assurance Society. Just last Wednesday, my Equitable representative was telling me about a special life insurance plan they have for men and women on the way up. Believe me, that's one great life insurance plan. So naturally, I know that This Is Your FBI is sponsored by the Equitable Society.
And in just 15 minutes, I'll give you full information about the Equitable Society's plan for men and women on the way up. Tonight's FBI file, The Curious Patient.
In studying the criminal records of the 6 million people in the United States today who have been arrested on charges of having committed a major crime, your FBI learned that less than 50% of those 6 million committed only one crime and then stopped. That is true despite the fact that they were caught and punished for that first crime. Because in the commission of their second one, they were buoyed by the optimistic thought that they had learned enough by then to commit a crime and not be apprehended. No class of people are given to such undue optimism as the criminal. Because optimism is necessary to feed his ego. And so he goes from crime to crime. Committing grand larceny one day, kidnapping another day, and the next day, murder. Tonight's FBI file opens in a small town in one of our northwestern states. A car drives swiftly down one of the quiet tree-lined streets in this village. It stops in front of a large white house. A man hurriedly leaves the car and walks quickly to the front door.
Yes? You, Dr. Crawford?
That's right.
Well, I'm a stranger here in town, but the fellow in the drugstore told me to come here.
What about?
Oh, it's my wife.
Yes?
Yeah, she's got to have a baby. She needs some help right away.
Where is she?
In a cabin about 10 miles out of town.
Has any other doctor been taking care of her?
Yeah, back home. But we've been on a trip. She's not going to be able to make it back there.
I see.
Doc, can you come right now?
Well, I have several other calls to make.
She needs help bad.
Very well. I'll get my car out and follow you.
We haven't got that much time. You ride with me. That's the cabin right there.
You certainly picked an isolated spot.
Oh, you know what housing is. It's the only place we could find. Let's go.
Surely. Is this your wife's first child?
Yeah.
Is there anyone else here with her?
No, she's alone.
Well, I may have to send you back to town to contact my nurse.
Anything you say, Doc. Here we are.
Is that your wife?
Yeah, open up. Go ahead, Doc.
Thank you.
Is he a doctor?
Yeah.
We'd better get right to work.
Is this the woman who's expecting a baby?
No.
But you said your wife was here alone.
Doc, that whole wife routine was a phony.
What?
You've got a real job to do.
What do you mean?
There's a guy in the next room with 3 slugs in him, and you're going to fix him up.
Why are you wasting time?
Okay, Doc, get to work.
Now, see here, I didn't come out to
I've
this...
I've got a gun, Doc. Do like I say.
But you have no right...
Look, the guy's in real bad shape, so get started. I better tell you this. If he kicks off, you go too.
Some 30 miles away at the local FBI field office, Special Agent Jim Taylor is just finishing a long-distance call.
Yes. Yes, I see. Well, thanks a lot, Warden. I'll get down there right away. Goodbye.
Calling it a day, Jim?
Oh, no, Leo. I'm afraid my day is just starting.
What?
Yes, it was a call from the warden at the county jail. A prisoner broke out down there several hours ago.
Who was he?
A man named George Brooks.
What was he in for?
He'd just been convicted on a big payroll job. Over $40,000 was stolen.
Was that the one down at Salem?
Yes, that's the one.
Well, I remember it. Brooks worked with a partner. The partner was killed.
That's it.
As I recall it, the money was never recovered.
No, Brooks evidently managed to hide it away at some point before he was apprehended.
That's probably the reason for his breaking out.
Yes, I know.
And why were we called in, Jim?
Well, we have a detainer on him. And it's important that we find him, too.
And did you get any details on the jailbreak?
No, not much. The only thing the warden told me on the phone was that he was sure Brooks was wounded by one of the guards.
Have the state police been alerted?
Yes, all authorities have been notified. They've already set up an extensive roadblock. Leo, I'm going down there now. I'll give you a more complete story when I return.
Jane, will you quit that?
What?
Walking up and down. Relax, will you?
Oh, sure. That's a cinch.
Look, there's nothing else you can do.
No. You think we could go in there?
No.
Is that doctor any good?
He's okay.
How do you know?
The drugstore guy in the village said he was the best doctor in the county.
Oh.
Gene.
Yeah?
You still go for Brooksy, don't you?
Are you kidding?
Well, what have you got the jumps for?
I want him to live for the same reason you do, so we can find out where he planted that dough.
Are you sure that's all?
Oh, baby. We were washed up before he was sent away.
He didn't know that.
Well, you knew it, I hope.
How do I know from James?
Honey, if you don't know about you and me by now, turn in your suit.
Okay.
Now, can I walk some more?
Sure. Oh. Doc, how is he?
I extracted the bullets.
Is he going to live?
I believe so, yes.
Swell.
Can I talk to him now?
No, he's still unconscious. Now, with your permission, I'd like to leave.
Wait a minute. You're staying right here?
You asked me to save a man's life. I believe I've done that. I have no further obligation.
Oh, yes, you have.
I have other calls to make.
They can wait, Doc. We ain't satisfied with a guy that's just going to live. We want one who can talk.
Are you still here, Leo?
Oh, yes, Jim. Working nights this week.
Oh?
How did you make out?
Well, I picked up a number of details on the jailbreak, but Brooks is still at large.
How'd he make the break?
Well, the warden said he had a woman visit him last week. She was his girlfriend. Her name is Jean Dodge.
Yeah?
It's believed that she managed to pass him a gun. He used that gun to subdue a guard, then used the guard as cover and managed to get through the front gate.
Yeah, just like that.
That's it. As soon as he was outside, the guard eluded him and immediately gave the alarm. There was some shooting, but Brooks got away.
And that's the last that was seen of him?
Yes, but his trail was picked up. He headed through a patch of woods, and judging from the bloodstains that were found along the way, he must have been rather severely wounded.
Well, surprising, then, that he escaped.
Well, he had a car waiting for him. Tire tracks were found showing where it had parked, and his trail led right to it.
The car got away before the roadblock took effect.
I'm not so sure of that.
What do you mean?
I have an idea there was a hideout already for him not too far from the jail.
Why do you think so?
Well, Leo, that's sparsely settled country. There's not many roads. And less than a half an hour after the break, every car was stopped within a 50-mile radius.
Oh, I see.
And there's another factor that may help. If Brooks was badly wounded, he's going to need medical attention and fast. So the warden's alert.
Wait a minute, Jim.
What?
Something came in a little while ago that ties right up with this.
Oh, what is it?
There's a doctor missing over in Quincy.
Really? What's the story?
Well, his wife reported it. A stranger came to their house about 6 o'clock this evening and told the doctor his wife was going to have a baby. They left in the man's car, and the doctor hasn't been heard from since.
Did his wife see this man?
No, she was in another room. She just overheard the conversation.
Well, did she know where they went?
No.
I'd better get all the details from her at once.
Baby, it's coming up daylight.
Yeah.
Don't you want to get some sleep?
No, I couldn't.
Well, Doc?
He's conscious.
You mean he can talk?
Yes.
Oh, nice going, Doc.
Now may I leave?
I'm afraid not.
Why? You promised...
I can't have you blowing a whistle on us.
Gene, go on in and talk to Brooksy.
Okay.
You've got to let me go.
Sorry, Doc. I'm tying you up.
Now, see, you're...
Gene, you know what to say to him.
Yeah.
I'll take care of the doc.
Hello, darling.
Oh. Hello, Gene.
Don't move, honey. Just lie still.
Okay.
You want anything?
No. No, no.
George.
Yeah.
I think I know you pretty well. What you like and what you don't like.
Uh-huh.
What you like best is the truth.
That's right, baby.
Well, that's why I'm going to tell you this thing.
What?
That doctor who's been taking care of you, I just now talked to him. Talked to him about you.
Uh-huh.
What he said ain't going to be so nice for you to hear.
Well, come on. Let's have it.
He said you're not going to live.
Oh.
Maybe I did wrong in telling him this, George, but...
No, 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 no.
Oh, darling.
Gene, don't, Gene.
Sorry.
Where's Whitey?
In the next room.
Does he know?
Mm-hmm. George, I know this sounds corny, but is there anything you want done?
I don't think so.
What about that dough?
Dough?
The dough you buried. If there's anyone you want to have it, you can tell me where it is.
Well, I... Ooh. I got a sister. She could use it.
Oh, I'd be glad to see that she gets it, George. Just tell me where to find it.
Okay, honey. There's a big red barn. It's on Route 18, 10 miles north of Salem.
Uh-huh. Go on.
The dough. The dough's in a box, buried right behind the barn.
Well.
You'll make sure my sister gets it.
Oh, of course, George.
But you don't even know her name. Where she lives.
Yeah, that's right. Wait, I'll get a pencil and write it all down.
Hold it. Call Whitey in here. I'd like to tell him about it, too.
Sure, honey, sure. Whitey?
Yeah, honey?
You got the doc all tied up?
Uh-huh.
Then come on in here. George wants to see you.
Okay.
Hello, George. Hello, Whitey.
Gene told you, huh?
Yeah.
Tough going, kid.
Whitey, there's something I want to tell you.
Go right ahead, George.
I told Gene where I buried the doe.
Good. But it was a bum steer.
What do you mean?
I just wanted to see how far you phonies would go.
George.
Just stay where you are, the both of you.
Now, wait a minute. Put down that gun.
Look, you. The doc already told me where I stand. He said I'm doing fine. What's more, I know what you two are up to.
What are you talking about?
I got the word when I was away about both of you.
Those were lies.
No.
Whitey, look out.
Too late, baby. Honey, you were crying over the wrong corpse.
We will reopen tonight's FBI file in just a moment. Now, a special message to men and women on the way up. To men who are confident that one of these days the boss will be calling them into his office to say,
"Well, Joe, we like the way you've taken hold here, so we're going to promote you to Jenkins' old job. Of course, that means a substantial increase in salary, too."
Did you know that there is a special life insurance plan for men like that? For men who expect to be filling a bigger job and earning more money 5 years from now than they are today? It's the Equitable Life Assurance Society plan for men and women on the way up.
Maybe I'm kidding myself, but I think that means me. So how about telling me a little bit more?
Well, this Equitable Society plan for men on the way up has three major advantages. First, it gives you and your family needed protection right now. Second, this Equitable plan provides for readjustments in the future. 5 years from now, when you're making more money, you can make up your mind whether you want more protection or bigger cash values. Or you may decide to work out a retirement program. Third, this Equitable plan is flexible at all times, can expand or contract as you see fit.
Sounds okay so far, Mr. Keating. How can I get the whole story?
Demonstrate that you consider yourself on the way up by getting in touch with your Equitable Society representative and asking him about this plan. Phone him as soon as possible, or send a postcard, care of this station, to the Equitable Society.
That's EQUITABLE.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now, back to the FBI file, The Curious Patient.
It was the immortal Bobby Burns who first said that the best laid plans of mice and men oft go awry. And as is proven by tonight's case in the files of your FBI, that is true for criminals as well as for everybody else. This case is the perfect example of the lengths to which the criminal mind will go. The complex plans it conjures up in the mighty effort to get something for nothing. The criminal mind is incapable of realizing that the only thing you get for nothing is nothing. And because of his failure to realize that obvious truth, he goes on stealing, lying, cheating, and killing. He lives in shadows, and he trusts no one. And he has one major goal in life. He wants to commit the perfect crime. And he never finds out until too late that there can be no perfect crime. Tonight's file continues at the local FBI field office.
Special Agent Stewart.
Hello, Leo. Jim Taylor.
Oh, hello, Jim. Where are you?
I'm out of Dr. Crawford's house.
Have you interviewed his wife?
Well, the doctor himself just came home about 10 minutes ago.
Well, then I sent you on a wild goose chase.
No, not at all, Leo. I'm very glad that I came here.
And did his disappearance tie in with Brooks?
Very much so. He was taken to a cabin where Brooks was hiding out.
Oh, I see.
The man who brought him there threatened him with a gun, made him take care of Brooks's wounds. After he patched him up, the doctor was then bound and thrown into a closet.
Well, how'd he get away?
Well, there was a fight. Brooks shot and killed his confederate.
The man who drove the doctor out there?
Yes. Then Brooks and his girl, who was also there, left the cabin and drove away.
Well, how did Brooks manage to move? I thought he was badly wounded.
Well, the girl practically carried him out. After that, the doctor managed to loosen his bonds and get out of there himself.
Has the doctor any idea where Brooks and the girl have gone?
No.
Could he describe their car?
Yes. He gave me everything but the license number. I've already passed it on to the state police.
Oh, what's the next move, Jim?
Can you get away from the office?
Yeah, William just came in.
Then get right over here, will you? The doctor will lead us out to the cabin.
Doctor, is this the room that Brooks was in?
That's right, Mr. Taylor.
Well, there doesn't seem to be anything here that'd tell us where they'd gone.
Oh, Jim?
Oh, in here, Leo.
I took an impression of the tire treads from Brooks' car.
Good.
You get anything in here?
No.
I think we should arrange to get the coroner out here. If we get the bullet from the dead man's body, it might be helpful to us.
Oh, Leo, I just remembered. I think I know who that man is.
Really?
Yes. Doctor, you say they called him Whitey?
Yes.
Well, I think I recall a petty thief called Whitey Floyd. There was a wanted circular on him. I looked at it just last week. We'll check on it as soon as we get back to the office.
Right.
Gentlemen, I wish I could have been more helpful to you.
Well, Doctor, after what you've been through, we appreciate your even coming out here.
I wish they'd been careless enough, Doctor, to let you overhear where they were going.
Say, wait. There was one thing. I heard that man Brooks say, I don't think it means very much.
Oh, what was it?
He remarked that they'd only travel at night to lessen their chances of being found.
I see.
Jim, they undoubtedly have a specific destination.
Oh, yes. I think I can guess where it is.
Oh, where?
The place that Brooks hid the money he took on the payroll job.
And all we have to do is to find where he hid it.
Yeah. Well, Doctor.
Yes?
Can you recall anything else that Brooks said? Anything at all, no matter how unimportant?
Well, I didn't get much chance to talk to him. As soon as he regained consciousness, I was tied up.
Well, did he say anything to you at all?
Let me see. He did speak once, but not to me.
Oh, what do you mean, sir?
Just as he was regaining consciousness, he mumbled something about R.I.P., beloved wife, Abigail.
R.I.P., beloved wife, Abigail.
Yes, he repeated it twice.
Well, that's really cryptic. Anything else?
No, I'm positive that was all.
Oh, thank you, Doctor. Leo, I think we'd better get a coroner out here, then head back to the office.
George.
What?
Don't you think you should try to get some sleep?
No.
Why not?
I don't trust you.
Oh, look, do we have to go over that whole thing again? I wasn't double-crossing you with Whitey.
Mm.
He made me tell that story about you dying. He said if I didn't do it, he'd kill me.
No kidding.
Look, you gotta believe me.
Stop yelling, will you? We parked this car out here in the woods to avoid people, not attract them.
He died. George?
What is it?
If you feel like you do about me, if you still think I was handing you one, why didn't you shoot me, too?
Because I needed you.
Honest, honey?
Just to drive the car. If I could move myself, you wouldn't be here.
Hmm.
I also need you to dig up that dough.
You're really going to get it?
Yeah.
Oh, what's so funny?
What a checker game this is.
What do you mean?
You're still alive because somebody's got to dig up that dough for me. I'm still alive because you wouldn't dare to slug me until I get that dough. What a setup.
George, that's not true, and you know it.
No. Wait till you get your hot little hands on that money box. Then what a rat race that'll be.
Oh, stop it. Look, how much longer do we have to park here?
As soon as it gets dark, sweetheart, we're on our way.
Jim, the coroner was just here. Gave me the bullet he took from Florence's body.
Good.
I'm sending it right to the laboratory.
Any word from the state police on Brooks?
No, nothing yet. How are you making out?
Well, I've been going through Brooks's complete record. So far, I've only come up with one thing out of his past.
What's that?
Well, as far as I can tell, he isn't married, never has been.
Well, then who is his beloved wife, Abigail?
That remains a mystery.
Well, what's that file you're in?
Oh, this is a complete report on the payroll sticker.
Oh, well, you go right ahead. I'll go downstairs.
Wait.
What is it?
There's a description of how and where the police apprehended Brooks.
Well?
I think it clears up the identity of Abigail.
Really, Jim?
Yes, and if he travels at night, as the doctor heard him say, I think we can catch up with him this evening.
I can't say I like this very much.
What do you mean?
Driving in a cemetery at night, it gives me the creep.
Make you think of Whitey?
No.
Turn left here, here.
Okay. Now what?
You see that big monument right ahead there?
Yeah.
Well, stop when you get past it.
Why did you pick a place like this to bury your dough?
I didn't have any choice.
Why not?
The cops were chasing me. I came in here to duck them. When I saw they were closing in, I quick buried the money.
Oh, is this the place?
Huh? Yes, yeah. Oh.
Now what?
Well, you see that little tombstone right over there?
Yeah.
Get out and see what it says on it.
Oh, fine.
Come on, move, will you?
All right. What should it say?
R.I.P. Beloved wife, Abigail.
R.I.P. Beloved wife, Abigail.
Well?
This is it.
Oh, good. Good, the box is buried right behind the stone.
What'll I dig with?
Use your hands. It's right under the grass.
Oh. Hey.
What's the matter?
There's a hole here.
What?
Somebody's already dug it up.
Don't give me that.
Honest, George.
You know I can't move. You're trying to cross me again.
No, I'm not.
I'm telling you the truth, George.
Huh?
Don't move, either one of you.
Who are you?
I'm a special agent of the FBI.
How did you know we'd be here?
Brooks here tipped us off to that.
What?
Yes. The doctor heard you mumbling about the inscription on this tombstone. We couldn't piece it in at first, but when I learned that you'd been arrested here, the rest was easy.
Oh, you stupid fool.
Brooks, I think a cemetery is a fitting place to tell you that the police want to talk to you about your friend, the late Whitey Floyd.
George Brooks was turned over to the local authorities. He was tried and convicted for first-degree murder. His girlfriend was sentenced to a long term in the federal penitentiary. And thus, your FBI thwarted another attempt to continue a career of crime. That the two criminals were caught is to the credit of your FBI. Because this was a case that called for trained investigation of every clue. And the added ability to weigh the value of each scrap of information. It is no accident that a special agent arrived at the correct conclusion. For the special agents of your FBI are given long courses of study in the art of investigation before they work on a single case. That is done so that you may be better protected. You, the American people. In just a moment, we will tell you about next week's exciting case from the files of your FBI. If you are what President Thomas I. Parkinson of the Equitable Society describes as a man with faith in his own future and the future of America, then you'll surely want to learn more about the Equitable Society plan for men on the way up.
Exactly how much will this plan cost me?
The Equitable Man has the answer.
How much protection does it give me right now?
Your Equitable representative can work that out in 2 minutes.
Does this plan offer me desirable options?
You bet it does. Your Equitable Man will be glad to give you further facts and figures on the Equitable Society's plan for men and women on the way up. Find him in the phone book or send a postcard care of this station to the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Next week, we will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Juvenile Shakedown. The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious. And any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. Your narrator was Dean Carlton, and Special Agent Taylor was played by Stacey Harris. This Is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Larry Keating speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. And inviting you to tune in again next week at the same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society will bring you another thrilling story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Juvenile Shakedown on This Is Your FBI. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
That's Case Closed for this week. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can find more from Crime Classics, This Is Your FBI, Case Closed, and all the other Relic Radio shows at the website, relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is up and streaming more old-time radio for you, aside from the thousands of stories available already on the website. If you'd like to help out, keep all of this coming to you every week for free, give that donate button a click. or visit donate.relicradio.com. Your support makes all of this possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.